sort of share this, but at least we'll make a start to the next. So, yeah, it's very, very special, by the way, to see a full house.
Yeah,
It came
the house
new.
is getting a bit bigger.
Yeah, Baruch Hashem, we have eight in the shir now. So a warm welcome again to Alex. This is now the real start. Alex, you have a Gemara Sanhedrin with you?
Yeah, I just got it yesterday, so I have it.
You do have it?
In front of me, yeah.
Great. Okay, wonderful. We're on Daf Yud Amud Aleph.
Okay.
Like I said, the last couple of days were not the standard because we were doing Chazar, but today, Be'ezrat Hashem, we're back into our normal routine.
Okay.
Okay, so let's refer back first and foremost to the Mishnah on Daf Beis Amud Aleph, right at the beginning of the Masechta. You remember we had a very, very lengthy Mishnah there, and we did not learn it all at the time because we said we're going to be referring back to it throughout the parak, so we'll learn it bit by bit. So that's what we're going to do. So if you have that Mishnah on Daf Beis Amud Aleph, the very opening Mishnah, it's on the sixth line, and it says, Makos Bishloisha. When we are dealing with a case which has the punishment attached to it of Malkus, then we need three Dayonim to be adjudicating. Mishum Rabbi Shmuel Omru, Be'esrim Vishloisha. So we have a Machloikas, is it three? Or is it 23 Dayonim needed for a classic case of Malkus? If you look there at Rashi tells us that we have to be patient. Have a look at Rashi. It's the 1, 2, 3, about the eighth narrow line towards the top there. And it says, Makos, Malkus, Arboim. This, of course, refers to the 40 Malkus. We always call it 40, even though, of course, it's actually 39. Says Rashi, Tama de Rabbi Shmuel, V'rabbonon, Mefarish b'Gemara. And in brackets, they're right there, Daf Yud Amud Aleph, Mikroi from Psukim. Now, we have a rule in our shir, which we have pointed out hundreds and hundreds of times, is that Rashi does not warn you of upcoming Gemara if the Mishnah can be understood simply. If the Mishnah could be understood, it happens to be there's questions and answers and kashas and rais in the Gemara, then Rashi has no need to refer you to the Gemara because the Mishnah is self-understood. So Rashi only refers you to the Gemara when the Mishnah is not self-understood. So Rashi knows full well that anybody learning the Mishnah is going to struggle. Like our Mishnah. Makkos is with three, or some say 23. Well, nobody can quite understand that on a simple level. Why should it be three? Why should it be 23? What's the machlokes about? Why does this one say three? Why does this one say 23? So Rashi says, good kasha. You're going to have patience. The bottom line is, it's based on psukim. Look in Daf Yud for further details. Now, just before we see Daf Yud, let's, very, very important to remind ourselves. When does a person get malchus? And the answer is, and this is very, very important. As we know, there are 365 lavim in the Torah. The rule is that a lav, a loisase, gets malchus. That's the rule. Now, obviously, as we all know, there are many, many exceptions to the rule. But where there is an exception to the rule, then the Torah writes it as an exception. So the Torah says, but if Loi Sirtzoch don't kill and whoever kills will be himself killed, well, then you know there is no Malkus. The Torah says whoever's Machalal Shabbos gets Skila, okay, so there's no Malkus. But where the Torah does not write anything, so the Torah simply says, do not eat Basa B'cholov. Do not eat Nevela. One moment, but it doesn't tell me what the punishment is if you do. So if no details are told, the assumption, this is the general rule, albeit with many exceptions, the general rule is a lav gets malchus. So if somebody eats nevela, he will get malchus. If somebody eats bosa b'cholov, he will get malchus. Now, there is another exception to the rule, Rabbi say. Those of you who have been with our shir for many years, hopefully will remember when we learnt Makkos. There is an exception where you have a type of lav, for example, which doesn't have Malkus, not because there's another punishment. This is called, for example, a lav she'ein boi ma'isa. A lav that has no act to it. Many lavim, for example, are involving dibur. Dibur. Dibur, speech, is never considered an act. Okay, so let's quote a classic example. The Torah says, as an Issa, loy sikoim, do not seek revenge. What's seeking revenge? So we all remember the famous Rashi al HaTorah. My neighbor wants to borrow. I want to borrow something from my neighbor. He says no. So the next day when he comes to borrow something from me, I say, well, you didn't lend me. I'm not lending you. That is a lav she'ein bo ma'isa. I didn't do an act, a physical act. It's not like eating nevela. So therefore, in that case, there will not be malchus. Not because there is an alternative punishment, but rather we have a golden rule. You can only get malchus when the lav is performed with an act, a physical act. Speech, with regard to this, is not considered a physical act. There are other exceptions as well. I don't want to get involved in that as well. So there are basically, those are the two types of exceptions. One type of exception to malchus is where there's an alternative punishment. Another type of exception is where the lav itself doesn't get a punishment at all. For example, if you steal, if somebody steals, then what does he have to do? He's got to return the stolen item. He does not get malchus. He does not get malchus. So now, look at Daf Yud Amud Aleph. We're now going to try.
Nevela.
Yes.
What's a nevela? Sorry.
Nevela is an animal which died and was never slaughtered halachically, never got shechita.
Okay, thank you.
Or technically, if you did shecht it, but something went wrong with the shechita in the middle. So effectively, it never got a shechita. So basically, it died.
Okay.
We must, by the way, always remember, just in brackets, because you bring this up, Alex. A live animal before it shechted is also for me to eat, of course, because it is eva min hachai. Even a goy is not allowed to eat eva min hachai. If the animal dies, it's true I'm not allowed to eat it, as we just explained, because it's nevela. But it's not an eva min hachai, for the obvious reason, because it's not chai. So it's definitely dead, no question about that. But it's not enough for it to die. It's got to die through shechita. What will be the difference? The difference will be for a goy. As long as the animal was alive, it was osa for a Jew and osa for a goy, evim and achai. If the animal drops dead in the middle of the night, a non-Jew will be able to eat it now. Why? Because a non-Jew has no mitzvah of shechita. He has the aveira of Eilam and Achai, that's true, but this animal is not dead. It's died. It's not alive. It's died. Whereas a Jew, it's not sufficient for it merely to have died. It needs to have died through Shechita. By the way, I don't want to get involved in the whole subject now because we're veering off a little bit. But over the years, in England, this is well known, unfortunately, where there have been challenges to Shechita, officially on the basis of cruelty to animals, etc. So very often the government would like to propose, we'll first stun the animal, and then you're welcome to shecht it. And the opposition very often is at one moment, but if you stun the animal, maybe it will die before it's actually shecht it. In which case, albeit it's no longer eva min hachai, that's true, it's definitely dead, but it did not, in fact, die through shechita. It died through other means. So this is always the balaga. Okay, we're veering off the subject.
You're not going to be happy with me because I have a question that's going to veer off.
No. So let's veer on. Can you email me the question? We're going to stay off. Okay. Says the Gemara Daf Yud Amud Aleph, Makos Bishloisha. We're back to our sugya. Mino Hanemeli, says the Gemara. What does that mean, mino hanamili? Where do you get these words from? Why would you say three? Why would you say 23 is definitely a machloikus in the Mishnah? At the moment, neither of the two have explained their position. So where do they get their opinions from? What is it based on? Omar Rav Huna, so Rav Huna says, Omar Kro. It's based on a pasuk. Which pasuk? It says in the Torah, Vishvatum, Vishvatum, or Vishoftum. How do we translate that? So literal translation of the words is, they will judge him. If you look at Rashi, Rashi on the side, Rashi says, Vishvatum gabe malkus ksiv. So this pasuk is not a general judgment, it is a specific judgment with regard to Malkus. So everything we need to know about Malkus can be learned from this pasuk. So it says, Vishvatum, they will judge him. Now, if it's they, so obviously that's a minimum of two. Otherwise it would say, and he will judge him. So this very pasuk that's talking about Malkus says, there's the pasuk in Kiseitse, as far as I remember, and the Torah writes, Vishvatum, they will judge him, meaning they will pasken his malchus. So it's got to be at least two, says the Gemara, Vishvatum shnayim. That's a minimum of two, because it's written in the plural, but we have the golden rule that we've mentioned so many times in this Masechta, Ve'ein, Bezdin Shokol, but you cannot have an even numbered Bezdin. So even though the Torah definitely means you've got to have more than one, but it can't just be two. Therefore, Moisifim Aleim Oid Echot. Therefore, we add one more. Hare Kan Shlosha. And that's how you get to three. So this is not a general rule. We know already from early on in the Masechta that generally there has to be three on the Bezdin. But here we're talking about specifically Malkus, not generally. Specifically, we're talking about Malkus. And the very pasuk in the Chumash talks about Malkus says, you've got to at least have two judges. We know, therefore, based on logic, you've got to add another one to get it to an odd number. So altogether, three. By the way, let's not make a mistake. We're not talking about how many Dayanim actually administer the Malkus. We're not talking about how many give the Malkus. We're talking about how many have to sit on the Bezdin to decide that he deserves Malkus in the first place.
Why didn't they say that three right away are required instead of you need two, but you can't have two, so three? Why didn't they just, so why did they say Shnayim to begin
with? We're trying to work it out how we learn it from the Pasuk. The Pasuk very often speaks in code form. The Torah does not spell out the number three. We have to work it out from the Torah. So the Gemara is explaining, so how indeed do we work it out from the Torah? Well, if the Torah used a plural form, we know that the Torah must require a minimum of two. But I also know you can never have an even-numbered Bezdin, so it must be. Therefore, in total, the Torah is requiring three. So the Gemara is simply telling us the various stages of how we reach this conclusion.
Thank you.
Problem is, says the Gemara, Elo Meato, we have a big problem. Elo Meato, now, if you're telling me that Vishvatum is plural, so that's two, well, I would suggest, says the Gemara, you keep on reading that Pasuk. Because you know how the Pasuk carries on? It says, Vehitzdiku. And it also uses the words Vahirashil. I don't know if anybody's got a Chumash in front of them, but it says in the Torah as follows. Somebody who comes to Bezdin, we're talking about Malkus, Vishvatum, and the judges will judge them. And then Vahitzdiku, they will either find him a tzaddik, meaning innocent, or Vahirashil, they'll find him guilty. Now, do we all agree that Vahitzdiku is also plural? They will find him innocent. Vehirshiu, they will find him guilty. So we've got three words in this pasuk that are all meaning two judges. So therefore, if every word that's written in plural is referring to two judges, and we've got three of those words in total, so it's 2 plus 2 plus 2 is 6, and we know, again, you can't have an even number, so maybe the Torah is really hinting to us, you've got to have 7 dayanim. Look at the Gemara. Elomeato. If you're telling me that a plural use of the word is referring to two dayanim, well, there's actually three words that are written in plural. Vehitzdiku shnayim, that's another two. Vehirshiu, quote unquote, is another shnayim. So it's 2 and 2 and 2, that's 6. But we know you can't have an even number. In which case, hare kan shiva, question mark. So therefore, it shouldn't just be 3, it should be 7. If the way you're reaching your conclusion about 3 is because the plural word is used, well, 3 plural words are actually used in this pasuk. You can't just choose one and ignore 2. So I've got 3 words, they're all written in plural, 2 and 2 and 2 is 6, which means to make it an odd number, you've got to have 7. Says the Gemara, no, answers the Gemara. Hahu mi boyale kedeula. Those extra words of vehitzdiku and vehirshiu are used to teach me an altogether different halacha, i.e. the halacha of ula. So before we go on to explain ula, let's just get the teretz clear. How many plural words are there in this pasuk? It's true there are 3. But 2 of them are not available. 2 of them are going to be used, they're booked up, and they're going to teach us a different halacha, which is going to be Ula's halacha, which we'll discuss in a moment. So how many are left? There's only 1 word left. V'shvatum is the only word available for a drasha. It's written in the plural. That means 2 dayanim. You can't have an even number bezdin. You add 1, you get 3. Bob's your uncle.
How'd you have 2? You said there were 3. There were Shvatim and Stiko, and then the 3rd. So if
the last 2 words are not available. The last 2 words are being used for a totally different drasha. Therefore, it's only the very first word.
2 words are being taught to teach 1 halacha?
Right. We're going to see how we learn from Ula in a moment. Now, let's introduce Ula. We know we have a principle. Again, we have learned extensively. Those of you who are with us for Makkas, but we've had it mentioned in the last 2 Gemaras as well. Edim Zoymanin. So Reuven and Shimon come into Bezdin and they accuse Ploini of being Mechalal Shabbos in Givat Shmuel on Parashas Beshalach at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay, so if Ploini was there and he was Mechalal Shabbos, he has to get Skila, he has to be stoned. Problem is, in walk Levi and Yehuda, the second set of witnesses, and they say, excuse me, Reuven and Shimon, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, on that very Shabbos, you were not in Givat Shmuel at all. How do we know? Because you are with us in Netanya. So it turns out, therefore, the first 2 Edim are liars. They're called Edim Zoymimin. Zoymimin means plotters. They plotted. They schemed. They wanted to get Ploini killed. So what happens to them? They themselves get killed. That is the famous punishment, Va'osisim Loi. Kasher Zomam, you do exactly to them as they wish to do to somebody else. Here comes the $64 million question, and those who are with us for Makkas might remember this from the very opening Mishnah. And that is, there are occasions where, for varying reasons, you cannot give the Edim Zomamin the punishment that they were trying to inflict. Again, the normal rule is whatever you are trying to inflict, that's what you get yourself. But there are some cases, which we're not going to discuss for the moment why that is, but for whatever reason, you cannot, and we do not give the Edim Zomamin the punishment that they themselves are trying to inflict. So the question is, what do you do with them now? Are they off free? And the answer is no. They get Malkus instead. Now, let's take a very simple example, okay? two Edim come to Bezdin, and they say, and this is the example of the Mishnah, we are hereby giving testimony that Mr. Cohen, who is well known to everybody as being a Kohen, is in fact not a Kohen after all. Or, specifically, he is a Kohen Cholol, which means he is a profaned Kohen. How so? Because actually his father married a divorcee. A Kohen is not allowed to marry a divorcee. If he does, then their children are profaned from Kohanim, which means they can't do Avodah, they can't eat Truma. That's what these Edom are coming to testify. Okay. We asked them, excuse me, sir, how do you know that this person is a Kohen Cholol? Well, we know that his father married a divorcee. Really? How do you know? Because we were there at the wedding. When and where was the wedding? It was on Rosh Chodesh Shvat in Bet Shemesh, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And it turns out the Rosh Chodesh Shvat, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they were not in Bet Shemesh, they were in Honolulu. So they cannot possibly know that the father was married to a Grusha, i.e. the Aedim Zaymanin.
He had a layover in Honolulu. No.
So the question is now, what are we going to do with the Aedim Zaymanin? Even in the event that the Aedim Zaymanin are themselves Kohanim, so in theory, we could say, listen, you are trying to profane Ploini, Mr. Cohen, from his kahuna. Well, we're going to do that to you. But the opening Mishnah in Malkus says, we do not do that. Why don't we do that? For reasons that we won't discuss now. We learn from a pasuk that we do not make Edim Zaymanin into a Kohen Cholol. So the big question is, so what happened to them? Do they walk home free? And the answer is, no, they get Malkus instead. So they're not off the hook.
Isn't the issue because they are not Kohanim and therefore you cannot...
Rashi is going to tell us even if they are Kohanim. Even if they are Kohanim. If you look in Rashi over here, Remez le'edim zomin, we don't have time to see it now, but Rashi says, even in the event that the Kohanim, the Edom themselves are Kohanim, which means theoretically you could have literally done to them whatever they were trying to inflict, but we don't do that. Why don't we do it? For reasons discussed in the Gemara and Malkus. So the Shaila is, what do you do with them? And the answer is, you give them Malkus. But why should that be? They themselves were never trying to inflict Malkus. Isn't the rule that whatever they were trying to inflict, that's what happens to them? They were trying to inflict Mr. Cohen on being a Kohen Cholol. So do that to them. And if you can't do that to them for whatever reason, so let them be off the hook completely. This was Ulla's world famous halacha. Ulla learned from the pasuk, which we don't have time to see today, but amidst Hashem next time, from the pasuk we just quoted, Vehitzdiku and Vehirshiu, we learned from over there that in the event that you cannot inflict on the Edim Zomimin the punishment that they themselves are trying to inflict, instead, you give them second best, which is Malkus. Therefore, it turns out that Vehitzdiku and Vehirshiu are booked up. They're not available for a drasha because they've long been booked up by Ulla. And therefore, in the final analysis, there is only one word in this pasuk which is available for a drasha. Which one is that? It says, Veshvotum, and they will judge them. That is plural. That's at least two judges. We've got to add one to make it an even number. That's three. And that's how we get the magic number three. Of course, we haven't yet discussed the other opinion that says 23, mitz Hashem, that will be coming up next week. Okay, so I'm sorry it was a short mashir today, but mitz Hashem, everyone should have a good Shabbos. Those who join us for the Parsha Shir, mitz Hashem, a Parsha Shir tonight, and back, Be'ezus Hashem, on Sunday morning. Mitz Hashem.
Mishzele, can you please make sure I get the Parsha Shir? I don't know if I can make it, but I need to listen to it. Would you mind? The recording of the Parsha Shir.
He's gone.
Yeah.
You're on mute.
Thank you. Thank you.
Will do. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much.